Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Wrestling is Cool Mads Club. I'm Santi, that's Sancho, and he's on vacation, and he has no choice but to do this episode because, Sancho, you had to read the fine print. You have to do every episode. Yeah. Or you'll never get on the thumbnail. It's the only way to get on the thumbnail. So I'm interrupting this man's wonderful family vacation to come talk to us about wrestling in a week where nothing happened.
It's true. It's like I can't take days off. And if I take days off, that our wrestling in school community is going to forget about me. I'm replaceable. You know what I mean? That's the problem.
Yeah, con man's just lurking around the corner, just rubbing his hands like Roman Reigns does, like a little fly during his entrance. He's just, ooh, when am I going to get that chance? Con already got in on the Match Club. He's like, when am I going to replace Sancho on the podcast? It's simple. WWE, just buy the podcast. Just buy the podcast. We can easily replace Sancho.
Please. We would. I bet you we'd pull better numbers than, let's see. Probably last, but still. Loophole numbers.
I love that you were about to put us ahead of someone. You're like, nah, we'd be last.
They don't have a SmackDown review show. What is that?
Yeah, we'll do the SmackDown review. We can absolutely do that. Yeah, I like that. Folks, welcome to the Wrestling is Cool podcast, coolest podcast on the planet. You know, you can be getting this episode 3 days earlier than everywhere else on the planet over on patreon.com/SantiZap, where you get the SmackDown reviews, the Raw reviews, our 5 weekly match watch alongs, and other series that are exclusively available here on Patreon. Of course, you can just wait.
Feed me more.
Of course, you can just wait to get the free version of the podcast, but that's pretty lame to wait because then it's just old at that point. It's old news. You could get this on Tuesday instead of Fridays. Ew, waiting till Friday. Gross.
And it's going to be ad-free if you do it on right now, because right now on Fridays on YouTube, bam, ad, bam, ad, bam, ad. Bam, ad.
Whippa.
Gunther Chop ads.
Bing bong.
Oh, man.
Dude, how funny was that contract signing between John Cena and Cody Rhodes? I was cackling laughing at the ridiculousness of WWE contract law, where Cody Rhodes just beats the crap out of John Cena and forces him to sign while he's unconscious. My favorite part is when he's unconscious, he's just like, you should have read the fine print. It's a street fight. It's like, how's he supposed to read it? You knocked him out. Oh,
it's a strange thing. It's like a 5-year-old said, oh, what's a contract sign? As long as he has his name on the contract, it works, and he used his own hand, right?
Dude, I feel like it'd be a fun thought exercise to rank the most illegal or non-contractually binding contract signings in WWE history and see kind of like where this lands. I would assume that the most like not legally binding contract in WWE history has had to be the Triple H and Stephanie wedding, the drive-thru wedding when she's knocked out, right? That's probably like the most egregious example of poor use of law in WWE history. And you're frozen. So hopefully you're still frozen. There.
Yes, I know, dude. This internet. Am I here?
I can hear you. We can hear you just fine. Here. But it looks like you're trying to take a little candid photo. You're looking at me sideways. Don't stress out about it. I'm still here. If the camera comes back, it comes back. He's on hotel Wi-Fi, folks. Logo.
It comes back.
Yeah.
Dude. Internet here is the worst. I can't explain to you that how bad it is. This is literally 10 up and 10 down. I'm sorry.
So, wait, are you don't dox yourself, but where are you right now?
I'm in right next to Disneyland. Like, literally, like, I see the rat's door. You know what I'm saying? It's right there. Oh, no. What does it say? Oh, failed to start camera. That's probably on your end. You know what? We'll be here. This is another way Santi's trying to stop me from being on the thumbnail.
No, man. This is demonstrates a lack of professionalism from Sancho. I went to Colombia. I went to a third world country for a month. And still showed up with good internet, with a good camera to entertain the masses. And all you can provide is a failed to start camera logo. Pathetic. And this is the man that's trying to get on the thumbnail. All right. Hey, well, hey, folks, it's gonna, if you're on YouTube, then I guess this is going to be an audio only episode. You're going to get my beautiful face and Sancho's little logo there. But yeah, man.
That's me on the thumbnail.
Yeah, you wish. So yeah, I was saying that I think the most contractually illegal contract in WWE history, this one's up there, but I think it's it's this Triple H and Stephanie wedding. That's probably the most illegal contract in WWE history.
No, it's the hand, dude. No matter what you say, the hand beats everything.
What do you mean the hand?
The hand out of Mae Young's. The hand out of Mae Young's oven, bro.
Okay, explain the law there. Wait,
does it have the assets of Mark Henry? Does it you know, take his right if he passes away? Does he own all his estate? I don't think so. Where do we go from here?
That's fair. Is it a legal heir? You're right.
Yes, Your Honor, does the hand able to claim right to the throne of Mark Henry? I do declare.
Hey, how about the contract reads McMahon? Shane McMahon. That's another good one.
That blew my mind. That blew my mind at that time. When Shane walked into WCW Nitro, I was like, what's going on here? It was wild. Wild times, dude.
Do you think that could ever happen with AEW or WWE? Like, dude, how insane would it be?
Which way?
I mean, what if TKO just, you know, TKO is a huge, huge conglomerate. We've seen with, I know you're in the gaming space with gaming companies. They're not afraid to close studios. They'll buy an asset and then they'll be like, this isn't working anymore. We're firing all of you and we no longer need the studio, right? Like, that's a pretty common thing when you have a big parent company. They're down to just slice and dice to get down to the meat and bones and be profitable, right? TKO is not a Microsoft level company, but in entertainment, it's a juggernaut for sure. Would there ever maybe be a point where TKO is like, WWE is no longer suiting our investors? Wow. Yeah. And TKO slices WWE out of their portfolio and in comes Tony Khan with all their billions. And the contract reads Khan, but not Nick Khan. It's actually my dad, Shahad Khan, but it's one of us.
That's possible. People don't understand that. That does happen in gaming a lot. You nailed it with that. I think Ubisoft is the big factor of that, because Ubisoft is part of Endeavor, I believe. Endeavor is like slowly buying all these things, and Ubisoft is one of them. And they're like dicing up all the Ubisoft basically studios. That'd be wild, dude. That'd be wild. That's the problem with going public with a big corporation like that, because it doesn't become about what you provide culturally wise, even though wrestling is seen as a strange part of our culture, but it's all about money. You know what is a big canary in that coal mine, Santi?
What?
Run on the livings, dude. That was a numbers game pull. Like, this guy's not giving us merch. This guy's not a ratings draw. This guy doesn't provide anything beyond. And they didn't realize that he provided much more than that.
Hey, it's true, man. Like, when we now have a cold-blooded big parent company, he's back. And we lost all our viewers. Yeah, there they go.
Don't be afraid, dude. Give me a Karrion Kross push, bro. Let me sink or swim. Come on, dog.
Santi, give me an opportunity, Santi.
Well, that's what we do. We put it on the thumbnail. You got me now.
Do you think that match, that feud gets on SummerSlam? We'll talk a little bit more about SummerSlam, but since you brought Karrion Kross, and our show today has a lot less structure, by the way, folks. We're just sort of winging it because of the vacation here. But
vacation.
Yeah, we're on vacation mode. He's on vacation mode. That means I'm on vacation mode. But what are you thinking here with Karrion Kross and Sami Zayn? They kind of build it like Sami Zayn was going to be out for weeks, right? They said, Sami Zayn is so hurt, he's out indefinitely. He was out for 1 week. I thought the indefinitely was going to be like he comes back right before SummerSlam to set up a match with Karrion Kross. But instead he comes back and it's instantly a match with Karrion Kross. Karrion Kross picks up the victory. Really cool visual of him and Scarlett kissing with like the blood on their face. That was pretty cool. But now that it's 1-1, is a third match warranted at SummerSlam, or does this not have the legs at SummerSlam? I would be kind of shocked if Sami Zayn misses both WrestleMania and SummerSlam in 1 year.
That bums me out. It's, I thought of this because I recently watched Superman, and I was sitting there like, Karrion Kross gives me Lobo vibes, right? Mm. Strong dude, charismatic, absolutely endearing, and he's a villain, but people love him. But the dude never beats Superman. Like, he rarely does, and if he does, he's probably lucky. But when it comes to Sami Zayn is Superman. That dude has plot armor for days. Ribs, indefinitely, broken head, doesn't matter. Sami Zayn's in the game. He is going to fight, and it takes a lead pipe to beat him, which is beyond strange to me, and that's the problem. When we were looking around, and I was looking over here in like a link of the past, throwing vases, looking for rubies, and I'm like, gotta give Karrion something, man. There has to be somebody on the roster he could feud with. But him landing with Sami Zayn, I was like, oh, man, that's cool. He could work with Sami, and Sami could sell his moves. He could put him over, and the one place that he can't put him over, Santi, is in the W and L column. He can't put him over as a dub. He just can't. Sami can't lose. And that's where we're sitting here. If the build is to a SummerSlam match, it has to be a gimmick match. And if it has to be a gimmick match, of course, Sami has to look strong no matter what. And what's the end game? That's my always question for it. It was the same question I had for Wyatt Six, Santi. What's the end game for the Wyatt Six? What's the end game for Karrion Kross? Because clearly he's not for gold, right? He's after the soul or something because he's the devil, you know. But is Sami Zayn's soul worth anything?
Oh, there goes Sancho. Give it a second here, folks. Give it a second here, buddy. Oh, yeah. This is quality right here. This is quality. This is what the people pay for.
Hotel.
Maybe you should turn off your camera. I think that will help. I think if you turn off your camera, might give you a little bit of extra juice. Break up as much. But okay, so you mentioned that, you know, Sami Zayn can't lose, but he did lose this match, right? But
That's what I mean, with the lead pipe.
With lead pipe, broken ribs, right? Like, it's, you're right. I do think that the big question is, like, what is the end goal here? I know what the end goal should be, right? Karrion Kross collecting that soul, Karrion Kross getting Sami Zayn to admit that Karrion was right. But I also think that even though that is the end goal, I think it's an unrealistic end goal that I don't think will ever actually be achieved with how Sami Zayn is protected and booked and versus how Karrion Kross isn't on the counterpart, right?
That's the thing. That's what I'm trying to say. It's like, where's Sami go? How did this affect Sami? Because when the Wyatt Six was with Chad, we were like wondering, ooh, what's going to happen to Chad? Is he going to be a good guy? Is he going to be able to see the error of his ways? Or the Wyatt Six going to move to the next person to turn? And we were throwing out so many different heels like, okay, Austin Theory could be this and this and that. And then what happened, Santi? What happened? Tell me when I'm saying lies, Santi.
I mean, if we're talking about Austin Theory, I think this is the perfect example of, like, this is why you don't let things overcook, right? Just pull the trigger when you can pull the trigger. Oh, my God. Holy smokes. What an unnecessary, like, I get long-term storytelling, right? But not everything needs to have long-term storytelling. Sometimes you can just do the cheap payoff and then build from that payoff, right? And that's what they needed to do with Austin Theory. And then here we are, the biggest, like, Triple H blunder since he's taken over, if you ask me, in terms of when you encapsulate everything, the desire for Austin Theory to turn babyface, then Triple H dragging this on for a year extra, it losing its steam entirely, and then boom, injury. Now, who cares? Like, I already didn't care. Now I triple don't care. Now you got Grayson Waller trying to join the New Day. What a mess, dude. What a mess this Austin Theory thing has been with Triple H's booking. It's just an egregious example of why I make fun of people that say, let Papa H cook. Here you go. Eat your steamed boiled piece of shit is what you got here, all right? And finish it and down it all. I don't want to see you leave anything on the plate, people that think Papa H should be allowed to cook for this long.
You know what they should do? You know what reminds me of when you put something in the slow cooker, you know, and you're like, ooh, this is going to be bomb. You know, hours and hours pass, and when you put like 12 hours into it, and then when you get home from a long day's work, Santi, and your dog tired and your feet hurt and you're just starving, and then you put it in the bowl and it's just nothing but mush, and then you have no choice but to eat it because you've committed the ingredients, you committed the time, you committed the resources, and here you are sitting with a bowl of mush. So we got to eat it. But I do think that there's a plan to bring back Austin Theory for a pop. That's why they said he's injured off screen. Like, they didn't do it on camera. Look, I'm just trying to find the silver lining here. It's a mess. It's ugly. I don't like it. It's a waste of Grayson Waller. It's a waste of the New Day as well. Because the New Day are actually doing something now. Interesting, right, with Adam Pearce, right? They're getting something. They're doing some fun things. And Xavier Woods, by God, sir, I do declare your thighs, those tree trunks, look amazing in those trunks. You know what I'm saying? They look phenomenal.
I don't like that I can't see your facial expressions when you're saying these things.
I'm looking like I'm leaning right into your camera like I'm going to give you a little smooch.
I don't like it. I don't like it. All right. Well, Sancho, we came into this episode with basically like one plan. We wanted to basically do a 6 month review of things that are six months into the year. So we've got a list of different things. And if we come up with different things as we go through our list here, then that's fine. We can add it here. But we can start off by reviewing WWE's relationship with Netflix. We're 6 months in, my friend. Monday Night Raw, of course, exclusively on Netflix. Then you've got NXT, PLEs, and SmackDown being on Netflix outside of the United States. Of course, you can access it with a VPN if you're still within the United States. I know that a lot of my viewers do VPN because having everything on Netflix is the best experience. Don't worry, this is not a transition to a VPN ad. If I was live streaming, yes, but no. It's just the truth. Sancho, are you a VPN user?
Yes. I wasn't at first, but now I am because, A, as a watch party person, the flow of wrestling is better, and it feels like a mini PLE. And I enjoy watching heels work, and most of the heel work is done during commercial. And that's what I enjoy, and that's what I feel like wrestling suffers a lot from heel work, is the heels have to appear cool by promos and what they do backstage, when back in the day they were just heels because all the things they did in the ring. And we miss most of it on commercial. And also you miss entrances as well from like up-and-coming people. Like Karrion Kross came out on commercial, and I know like I missed that. But I saw it on your review, on your reactions, but because I don't have a VPN while I'm out and about. But the point is, yeah, I think VPN is crucial. And more importantly, I do feel that I'm still undersold on what Netflix was kind of touted to be.
What did you think it was going to be touted to be?
It felt like it was going to be a place where it was uncensored. You know, they still censor things, even the crowd chants and things of that sort. It's not as edgy as I thought it would be. I'm not looking for Attitude Era. I'm not looking for hands coming out of ovens. You know what I mean? That's not what I'm looking for. You know, why you don't do this to me? That is a photo that I took in back in my house. I was feeling sexy, dude. Come on, bro. No.
This is the man you want in the thumbnail.
Did you just Google and search me? Dude, that's just a handsome fella.
It is. It's a handsome fella.
It's a handsome fella. Dude, that was like, God, that was my first house in California. Oh, boy. That was like 10 plus years ago at this point, I think.
Oh, man. Look, I'm just going to periodically keep finding more photos of you. Anyways, what were we talking about? Okay, so you thought it was going to be edgier. You thought it was going to be grittier. But yeah, now they censor more than like Fox did.
Yeah, that. And I thought like we wouldn't have runtime obligations. I know there are times we have gone over, but it feels like it's such a tight 2 hours and a half. And it's the only thing that I've noticed that's better is the quality of the stream service. It's better to me than Peacock. It looks crispier. I love the look of it. And the logo on the top right looks cool. and it does add some prestige to it. Like, if you're on Netflix, dude, that matters. It's one of the, it's the biggest streaming service in the world, and as you mentioned, everything in one roof. On a VPN, it's nice to have SmackDown and Raw, and it's also when I'm traveling, like, I could easily and be able to watch Raw easily without having to do like a cable app or a Sling or anything weird like that, you know.
I love the experience on Netflix, me personally. Just the convenience of it. I think I'm willing to sacrifice, you know, not the upgrade in quality programming. I don't think we have a downgrade, to clarify. But I'm with you. I kind of was expecting things to get a little bit edgier. But the pure convenience of it as somebody that gets everything under one roof is, like, I almost can't put a price on that, although I literally can, the $24.99 that I pay a month on Netflix. It is so worth it to me. It makes Netflix such a valuable asset in my day-to-day. And I'm really curious, from a business perspective, how much stickier this is going to make having a Netflix subscription for those that are WWE fans. Like, I do think that once you experience having everything in one roof, that you're not going to want to go back to have to piecemeal things like NXT on the CW network, USA Network, Netflix, PLEs on Peacock. I like having everything under one roof. I've liked the experience of it. We haven't had any technical issues aside from what happened in Saudi Arabia. So for the most part, I would say it's been a successful run on Netflix from that regard, but I haven't really gotten the, like, what I also thought was going to be an upgrade in programming, in terms of quality storytelling. Mm-hmm. And actually that's not true, because the fact that we have things happening on commercial, like you say, does kind of help to creating a better overall experience with added matches, added promos, at least on Raw, right? It's giving people more of an opportunity to appear on the show without actually taking time on the network. Like, for example, Trick Williams just had a solid promo about The Undertaker and TNA on commercial break. Karrion Kross kind of built his whole hype on the commercial breaks on Raw Netflix. Mm-hmm. So from that perspective, in terms of giving more opportunities to wrestlers, I think it's been a win. What do you think?
I like that too. That's definitely been a win, but you got to, like, look at the, like, how though. How does that commercial segment get out? They don't post that on WWE sometimes. You got to have a hand in it. I mean, not only you, but other content creators. No, dude. What are you doing? Dude, that's a handsome fella right there, partner. are you just going down my IG or something?
Listen, I have to keep people visually stimulated.
That's true. You know, the new gen. But look, that's like, Your Honor, I do declare Cody Rhodes illegally forged John Cena's hand despite having it. By the way, I know we skipped over it, but I like how John Cena was like, I can't. I mean, I'm tired.
Did you catch on that was was roasting Pat McAfee?
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, that was funny too. He was just like, I'm exhausted. I got a movie to do. I like that he brought Netflix into the play. That was a fun thing, right? Netflix is the big top, like the big bad. Like, I'm sorry, I'm doing a movie for Netflix. And Netflix said, no, I can't do it. And I think that's quite interesting little wrinkle too. And the only thing, I walking away from that, I know we switched topics quickly, but I don't think that's he is becoming a babyface and Cody Rhodes is becoming a heel. No, that's just Cody as the babyface has been frustrated. He is a babyface that is allowed to be frustrated. He's a babyface that's allowed to be angry. He's a babyface that's allowed to hit heels with chairs and do all these kind of crazy things, contracts, signing splashes. If that's not in 2K, I wouldn't be upset. But back to the topic of Netflix. I was hoping that we could get more experimentation.
You're cutting up there. You wanted to get more what? Oh, we're losing Cowboy Sancho here. We're losing Cowboy Sancho. Maybe we can bring in this another Sancho here to replace him. Let's see. What can we bring in? What about Imposter Sancho? What are we bringing this guy in?
Hey man, you got to do what you got to do.
You can find some crazy photos of me, brother. Anyways, listen. Man,
I've been in the game for 12 years, dude. What do you expect? Got a lot of gimmicks.
Dude, whoa. Yeah, dude, I want to see all of the gimmicks. We're gonna experience more Sancho today. You were cutting up there, my friend. What were you trying to say?
Experimentation, like, in terms of, I know we've gotten the drone shot, the continuous shot, but I'm wanting, like, you know, Lucha Underground type of storytelling, too. Like, it's Netflix. Netflix audiences are used to dramas. Why not shoot something like a Netflix drama for some storyline, like they did in NXT with the Tony D'Angelo and the family?
What about, like, the outside of the traditional WWE programming that we know, right? Like, they're about to do, they did, like, the Vince McMahon documentary. They've done, they're about to do WWE, The Truth, the, like, behind the scenes Unreal. Stuff. Unreal, thank
Unreal.
You.
Unreal.
What are your thoughts on those added pieces of context in WWE programming that aren't just the traditional, you know, weekly shows?
I've always wanted to know the behind the scenes of wrestling. I just don't want to know how the sausage was made. Like, I like the 24/7 docs because it was from the wrestler's perspective of how they grind and the reality of it. As a Netflix product, I think it's right up their alley. But I do feel that we're about to jump the shark with kayfabe right here with this moment. Like, I don't want to know how a match is booked or how they put it together. Because then it's like, well, how deep are they going to go? Are they going to say, this person's pulling in numbers? We're going to, you know, they're selling merch. We're going to put this person in this position. And then that's when we could be, I don't know, I feel like as an internet community, Santi, we can't be given ammunition. You know, we can't be given all the kind of assets, because if we get all the assets, it's going to be like a crazy Gary's Mod or Roblox. We're kind of going to go really crazy with it. You know what I mean?
I mean, I guess it kind of depends, like, who this is targeting, right? I would say that, like, oh, well, like, what if the internet wrestling community doesn't really watch this? But I feel like it's targeted specifically for those people, right? I feel like just a casual viewer of WWE doesn't really care how the match is produced or made. I think this show is basically tailor-made for us, the super hardcore, the ones that already kind of overanalyze professional wrestling. And since we already overanalyze it, I don't think that exposing the meat in how it's made, I don't think that'll have as much of an impact as you're saying. If it was being exposed to the wider, you know, audience, which technically it is, it's available to be watched. I just don't think that the wider audience is going to care about this product. What do you think that a casual would gravitate to this show?
Did you hear about the Vince McMahon documentary? I know you watch pro wrestling. And I'm like, yeah, I know, you know?
Okay, sorry, you cut out a little bit. So you're saying that people that aren't wrestling fans were bringing up the Vince McMahon documentary to you? So is it kind of like what your reasoning is as to why they might actually care about WWE Truth or whatever, or Untold?
Maybe, like, I think so, but I don't think, like, the Unreal stuff won't attract the same amount of casuals as the Vince McMahon documentary, was my point.
I agree. In that regard, if it's not really impacting the casuals, if it's mostly going to impact the nerds, right, the us of the world, do you really think it'll have a negative impact then? Because we already know that the sausage is made in certain ways. It's just now maybe seeing a little bit more of, you know, where the product and where the meat is coming from, as opposed to just knowing that it's fabricated. I'm kind of interested.
Yeah,
in
but
seeing,
are you going to watch it?
Yeah, probably. I mean, just I think I'm a bad example of somebody that would say no, considering it's my job to cover WWE. But maybe if I didn't cover WWE, maybe I wouldn't watch it. Maybe I wouldn't care. But I'm going to watch it.
I'm on the fence about it, dude. I don't know if I would watch it, because it feels like something that they've protected for so long, you know, and it was part of the magic. It's part of the magic. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to know how WrestleMania 40 came together. I mean, I already know pieces of it where Undertaker on this podcast was like, yeah, they came up to me last minute and this and that. Like, I don't want to know how Stone Cold contract signing failed, or I don't want to know what they thought. I don't want to know what was the goal. Like, what was the actual thing they had planned? Like, Rock and Roman. Like, you know, are they going to go that deep?
Oh,
you don't have to know everything.
That's what I want to know. I actually hit the one thing that I do want to know. I get it. Like, not knowing, you know, is a mystery, keeps us, you know, continuing to talk about it until the end of time. It'll always be this water cooler conversation amongst wrestling fans. But I just want to know. It's like how, you know, like in the early 2000s and in the 90s, you'd have conversations and debates and disagreements, and you couldn't just pull out your phone to find the answer. Now, in an era of the digital age and information age, I want to know the answers immediately, and I want to know the answer as to how everything went down for WrestleMania 40. We may have lost Sancho there one more time. I'll move on here from Netflix to talking about Cena's run. Sancho, you jump in if you're here. I don't actually know that you are. Hang on.
Okay,
so you are here. Let's talk about Cena's heel run. That's the other thing that we've had here going on for not the full 6 months, but basically Cena's retirement tour has been going on for the 6 months, with his return at the Royal Rumble, coming in second, winning Elimination Chamber, turning heel, going to WrestleMania 41, one of the worst matches of the year, the whole Travis Scott thing, wins the Undisputed title, then faces against Randy Orton, then the Ron Killings feud, then right back to Cody Rhodes, the CM Punk stuff. I'll hand it off to you to just kind of give your thoughts about the John Cena heel run here over the first 6 months. Hopefully you don't cut out, but I'll hand it over to you, friend.
Moved it. I'm since I'm not on camera, I'm just moving it closer to the Wi-Fi spot. There's a part of me that goes, what if he was a face? And I think if he was a face throughout the 6 months, it'd be like more of a nostalgia pull. And I think more than ever, the ceiling would be so low for face Cena. But what I have been enjoying in heel Cena is that it is kind of endless. Like, they could go anywhere because it's a new toy. It's a new plot device if you want to get nerdy about it. It's a new character that they never explored. And it does feel like we're in a multiverse. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It feels like we're in a multiverse of John Cena, the heel, which is something that I doubt what you would ever thought would happen, ever. Did you think it would ever happen?
Hell no. Dude, the amount of times I went to bat in a video saying that the Cena heel turn is never going to happen, like, too many times. That's why it's kind of crazy full circle for me that I was so adamant it was never going to happen. Not only did it happen, but I was there for it to happen. It's just kind of like a sick little twisted joke that the universe played on me.
And I think, like, as the six months, I think the first half was awful. It wasn't the best. And I think it's because the kind of milestone, the first marker of it, was WrestleMania. That Mania put a sour taste in everybody's mouth. But it's a sign of the TKO Netflix era of big stars bringing in people. And that derailed all the momentum John Cena was building. Because now we don't have definitive. It's Mania will always be tied to that, and that sucks. That truly does suck for the most important moment of the heel run. By the way, sure, the heel turn happened, but the biggest part of the entire moment was John Cena winning the 17, and so because of that, you can't give a solid grade to this heel run so far in the halfway point. Now, they are turning the ship around, Santi, and things are happening that are quite exciting. I feel like it's strange to me, and I don't know if you feel this way. It's like we've used some of the big guns midpoint already. Like, Randy's gone. Now CM Punk's gone. Like, what's the plan now? And I think that's an okay situation to be in. You know, we could assume there's people out there on the internet that's going to go, oh, he's going to turn face, and now we're going to get the last six months of him being a face. But I do argue that if he goes face, he has to go face to put someone over, like to give more power to Cody, to give more power to LA Knight, and just throwing out baby faces out there to Jey Uso. But I don't see the WWE doing that because there's still so much of a vast unit. There's literally, it feels like a universe to explore with heel Cena, and I think we need that 6 months to keep it up. And then the end point could be either Cena gives it up, he becomes, I don't think he ends as a face. As time goes on, and the longer he's a heel, I think he ends his career as a heel. To solidify the point, like, dude, this dude's a goat. This dude could be the best face of all time, and he definitely gave us the best run as a heel of all time.
It is interesting that you point out that, like, some of the heavy hitters have already been used in this heel run. It's almost as if it was designed to end at SummerSlam, but I'm curious how the plans with Cody Rhodes taking time off after SummerSlam maybe have shifted that. Because now, you know, if you asked me 2 months ago, when is Cena going to lose the world title, I would have said to you 1,000,000% against Cody Rhodes at SummerSlam. Now I'm like a 50-50, like toss a coin. I'm not really sure when Cena is going to lose, if he's going to hold past SummerSlam, go right into retirement with it, losing his final match. But I'm not convinced that he's losing at SummerSlam. In terms of like my overall thoughts on the heel run is that we are in an upward trajectory, I would say. It's improved vastly. The first kind of stage of it, we were kind of still in the dating phase, right? We were dating heel John Cena. We were trying to learn what our relationship is with him. And they spent so much time talking about how John Cena's relationship has changed with the fans, so much so that like John Cena's like first like six promos, I might be exaggerating, but it felt that way, were all about how he hates us, right? How the fans are no longer something that he cares about. And even like going into the Randy Orton feud, the promos were about the fans, not so much about Randy Orton. And ever since we moved past the John Cena hates the fans shtick, I feel like the heel run has finally flourished. Like, it's finally arrived. Like, I love the stuff with CM Punk. I love the Dr. Punkonomics. I love the Weird Al Yankovic version of the pipe bomb. I love the actual match, how crazy the shenanigans were. For the problems with the buildup and the feud to Randy Orton, I thought that the match was excellent. The stuff with Ron Killings was as good as it can be. I mean, I never thought that Ron Killings was going to be winning world championships or anything like that, but like his return at Money in the Bank was really cool. I'm at the point now, Sancho, where I think that WWE was intending for the heel run to be done at SummerSlam. I am not ready for it to be done. I am not ready for the championship run to end at SummerSlam. I want to see more of this. I want to see it continue to get better, because every single month, every single PLE cycle, it has improved in some way, shape, or form. And we have officially lost Sancho here, ladies and gentlemen. Hopefully he's able to join us here. But I can kind of carry on here where we're going to move on next. We're going to talk about the women's mid-card titles. That's the other thing here that has a six-month time stamp on it. We have the Women's United States Championship being minted and introduced at the end of 2024. And then we had the Women's Intercontinental Championship being minted at the very beginning of 2025. So we can kind of, or at least I can, kind of talk candidly here about the first 6 months of both the U.S. title and the Women's Intercontinental Championship. Really just the women's mid-card in general. Because before these titles were introduced, the women's mid-card was essentially just the women's tag team division, right? Like, hey, if you're a woman, we have nothing for you. You're just going to go into the women's mid-card, and that's our women's tag team. We'll find a makeshift tag team for you in the meanwhile, and bada-bim, bada-boom, there's our mid-card. But adding the women's mid-card titles, the singles titles, really did expand the opportunity within the women's mid-card, which I think is obviously a very, very good thing just in general for the roster. It's just more opportunities to win things, more opportunities to have storylines and feuds, more opportunities to have marquee matches on PLEs. Now, I would say that when it comes to the women's mid-card titles, the IC title has absolutely knocked it out of the park. It struggled initially on the onset with Lyra Valkyrie as the champion. The feud with Dakota Kai really wasn't going anywhere. Yes, she was having great matches, but she wasn't really connecting with the crowd. The IC title, for all intents and purposes, basically missed WrestleMania. Yes, she had a match. The champion had a match, but it was for the tag titles. But it really was the return of Becky Lynch that really just, dare I say, saved the women's mid-card on Monday Night Raw, because it provided additional like star power. The heel run of Becky Lynch has been sensational. And in the process, she's been having match of the year contender after match of the year contender after match of the year contenders with Lyra Valkyria, to the point where through in-ring work and through giving Lyra Valkyria a good dancing partner on the microphone, the mid-card has now found a new potential like top star within it in Lyra Valkyria. So the women's mid-card over on Monday Night Raw is in an excellent position. Even if Becky Lynch is removed now and you put the title on Lyra Valkyria, you have a champion that you have molded, that you have put under pressure, that can now carry that division in the absence of a big name like a Becky Lynch. The U.S. title, on the other hand, we're in a different boat. Obviously, we had Chelsea Green winning the inaugural tournament at Saturday night's main event. But basically, right from the onset of her being champion, she just was not booked like a champion. She was still booked like this cowardly heel, which is fine. You can have a cowardly heel champion. Perfect example is like a JBL, right? A JBL, a Dominic Mysterio. Those champions work. But the difference is that those champions would manage to find victories even in their cowardly ways. Chelsea Green, on the other hand, was finding loss after loss after loss. She would, once she would have a title match with like a Meechan, she'd find a way to retain, sure. But in the buildup to those, she was treated like fodder, right? She was a casualty along the way. Luckily, they then added the Secret Hervis, so then the Secret Hervis could take the losses and the buildup towards having a match against Chelsea Green. And that's how they ultimately ended up building Zelina Vega. Zelina Vega wins the title, and then they have nothing for Zelina Vega. It's a lackluster match against Chelsea Green. She then unceremoniously loses the title to Julia. Julia is now the champion. Since winning the championship, she's like not been featured a lot at all, really, on Friday Night SmackDown. And so we've got ourselves a championship in a division that's kind of in the gutter right now, unfortunately. It's unfortunate how much in the gutter it is at the moment. I think we might be getting Sancho back here in just a second.
Hello.
Oh, there he is. I think he's back. How are you?
Hi. I am on the phone now. So help me, Lord.
what a mess. Okay, so I already talked about the rest of the Cena bit. I basically just talked about the women's mid-card on my own there. I think we can, do you have any thoughts on the women's mid-card? The review of them?
I think it's the same thing as what happened with John Cena's career, like a heel run. It's just such a slow start, dude. Those beginning feuds were so bad. Like when Dakota kept vying for the title, and then when Zelina kept vying with Meechan, that it felt like they had no plans post giving people mid-card titles. And then the fact that the mid-card titles did not appear on Variety appealees really hurt it the most. But I don't know, man. It's when that Monday Night Raw, like you mentioned, that was kind of interesting, and that the fact that they have Rhea Ripley involved in it kind of puts a lot of prestige on it, and I think they could definitely turn around here in the midpoint.
Mm-hmm. And adding Becky Lynch has been like a big, big like life raft for the women's mid-card.
Yeah.
But like I was saying before you joined, it's a life raft that's turned into a proper boat, because if Becky Lynch were to leave the division now, they've built up Lyra Valkyria to the point where she could carry that division moving forward on her own. I don't think that she needs Becky Lynch, but I think that the women's mid-card over on Friday Night SmackDown needs a Becky Lynch. I don't know who that could be, Alexa Bliss, Charlotte Flair. I think they just need somebody with pull to be that catalyst to help elevate the women's mid-card, Sancho.
And for those people that are worried about the internet, the next hotel should be better. This one is just terrible. It's like a casino. They don't want me to be in here. They want to be out there in mouse land, you know? But yeah, in regards to that, I think Becky kind of reminds me of one of those James Gunn movies where you go to see the star, like the Superman, and then you fall in love with like a Mr. Terrific. You know, you get in the door, they get you in the door with Becky Lynch, and then you start falling for Lyra. My concern for the mid card is Bayley can't be a tweener. You know, you got to commit Bayley to one side or the other.
That was weird on this episode of Monday Night Raw, what they were doing with Bayley, right? That tag team match, the way she was like overly happy with Lyra. I was expecting a heel turn or something between those two, but it was just a clean match at the end of the day. But yeah, I would say the women's mid card just in general, it's been for the U.S. title, it's been a lot of downs, mostly downs. Luckily on Monday Night Raw with the IC title, that thing is definitely on the up. Yeah, women's mid-card on SmackDown needs a life raft. The other thing that we are 6 months into here, Sancho, is Penta. Cero Miedo coming over from AEW. And then after that, we had the likes of Rey Fénix and Rusev and Aleister Black all coming over. But it really got started with Penta this year, who debuted not on Raw Netflix. They saved them for the week after against Chad Gable. He goes on a nice little win streak. He eventually does enter a proper championship picture and feud for the IC title going into Mania in Backlash. He gets a chance at Money in the Bank, is main eventing Raw's left, right, and center. They've never really pulled the trigger on him to like win anything big, but it's very clear that WWE has valued Penta's work over the last 6 months. And at first glance, I would say that Penta has had a much better 6 month career in WWE than I was expecting. Mostly because in my head, Mask equals LWO Vortex and you disappear there until the end of time. And I'm so glad that they didn't do that with Penta and that they didn't do that with Rey Fénix either. It's like WWE has finally in 2025 learned to use a luchador not named Rey Mysterio, and it really did start with Penta this year. Thoughts?
It's funny when the crowd, remember when they were like, Ray was like, I have a mystery partner. It was against the New Day. And we're like, please no Penta.
Yeah, nobody wanted Penta. That's right.
The next day, it doesn't happen. Like, it was quite interesting. I think more importantly, they did luck out on that where Ray's contract, well, Rey Fénix's contract had the delay because of the injury time attached to it in AEW. Then Rey Mysterio gets hurt as well. So they kind of need that void to fit at Worlds Collide. So there was like so many interesting things that had to fall in line. But for me, I think like, I don't know what people expected from a solo Penta, a singles Penta. They thought that he would get an IC gold early. I mean, he was involved a lot in the IC title at Mania as well. He had the match. But I just feel like right now he's getting strong pops. And I know he's getting memes. That's important. I really do think in WWE culture, if you're a meme, that's important too. He has one. And more importantly, he's just awesome, dude. When he came out with that leather jacket, that one Raw, I was like, okay, he could do something beyond just being a luchador. He could just be a cool character just popping up in random places. How do I sound? I'm on speakerphone on the phone. Is that better?
Honestly, you sound better.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, like audio quality isn't as good as your mic, but like you sound good and you're not breaking up. I think we should rock with this for the rest of the show.
Yes, indeed. And I do apologize for audio listeners. People are like, why did Shacho really, dude? It is not that easy to get strong internet where you're not around. I mean, maybe I have to get that $30,000 pack, you know, that the IRL streamers have, that the iShow Speeds and Kaizen.
That's 30 bands?
30 bands, dude, for the one that they have now. And then you have to pay a monthly fee because it's like it pulls signals from like five different places. There's like lower versions of that for sure. But for something where they could stream like in an elevator, like they don't want any drops of quality because as soon as a quality drops, people leave. And I'm sure the numbers will reflect that here today in our podcast. But, yeah, it's going to be better. It's going to get better. But going back to it, that's the one moment I do want to know about is the iShow Speed one, because that doesn't feel like there's any kayfabe attached to it. Because that feels like, oh, how can we roll in a celebrity in this Royal Rumble? let's figure out the minutiae of that. That to me sounds interesting because it's Tozawa. Does that make sense? Like, I know I'm being a la carte and buffet-ish about it. Like, I don't want to know about John Cena or Roman Reigns and The Rock. I do would love to know about Aisho Speed and Tozawa taking a spot, or the Tozawa taking Tozawa's spot.
Oh, you're talking about like WWE Untold, or
Unreal? Yeah,
man, I keep saying everything except Unreal. I'm like Untruth, The Truth, Untold,
Nonfiction.
All right, yeah. So decent, Santi, decent.
Can
start.
I say something?
Yeah,
can I feel something? It feels like I'm on the phone on the floor. You ever talk to someone on the floor on the kitchen?
And, no, you know, you hang up. Like... No, you hang up.
Because I'm literally on the floor.
Are you like this? Plug. I don't know if you can see me. Are you like this? He's like, Santi, tell me about your day.
I am. It's like, you know, I'm on vacation, but I'm talking to you.
I think it's time to bring in a new Sancho.
A new Sancho enters the fray.
Let's see.
Which one? Dude, so this shoot, there's one where I'm hugging my PlayStation like it's my jazz trumpet. It makes me laugh because this was for the Asus modem router, whatever. And I remember still having this in this. Oh, okay, Hot Boy's back. But yeah, that Asus router thing, I'm wearing this fedora. That's actually a Rocky replicant fedora. It was replicated from the one he wore in the movie. And man, dude, you ever get these sponsor deals? I have no idea what to do. I have no idea what you want from me. And I did this and they loved it.
You look like a douche.
Would you buy the router based on this photo?
Oh, you're holding a router?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you are. I didn't notice. Why are you looking at me like that? I don't like it. I don't like your fedora. I don't like you. I don't like you in this photo.
I've been 12 years in the game. Oh, look at me. I'm out here slinging routers and things like that, and you're out here, hey, kids, time to play the slots.
Yeah. I'll find more photos, folks. Don't worry.
What do you want to talk about?
Well, the other thing that's almost exactly 6 months old is Tiffy's run as WWE Women's Champion. She cashed in on the first episode of Friday Night SmackDown of the year, if you remember, against Nia Jax. She held through beyond Elimination Chamber, beyond WrestleMania, past Evolution. I'll give you the floor here. Thoughts on Tiffany Stratton's run as champion thus far?
I feel like people came down on us because we were saying like the title doesn't have that same merit as the IC title and Becky. And there was a lot of comments on that, like Tiffy has had bangers. Sure, she's had bangers, but I feel like everything else is not there for it. Like every promo is very similar. I think the start of Tiffy, because you know how we start this, you know, Money in the Bank. And from your experience, though, Santi, when someone wins the Money in the Bank, what's the best way to keep that rocket going?
If somebody wins Money in the Bank,
then cashes in and it's successful, how do we keep that going? Because there's always that moment, like justifying them being champion because they did it the swindly way. But it's like
matches, the Money in feuds, the Bank. Wins.
And Tiffy has the only thing that's missing for me is the feuds, because they had one with Nia Jax, sure. And when Nia Jax shows out, they could put on a banger. But it's like the match with Trish Stratus, the match with the tag team at Elimination Chamber didn't do anything well. It just feels like I'm missing that iconic feud that is not Nia Jax. And I know that Nia Jax is getting better, but it's like that doesn't feel like that's a feud that's going to last forever. Because I do see Nia and Tiffy reforming and being heels together at some point. I'm talking about that iconic match to be like a Raquel and Rhea. You know what I mean? That Brett and Shawn, brother.
The Tiffy and Nia stuff was fine, but I felt like there was, with this championship run, there's been so many missed opportunities. Like I felt like they did a really poor job at building Tiffy to Charlotte, and
yes, they
you
did.
Doing yeah. a tag team match at Elimination Chamber was kind of one of the bigger culprits there. You could have That's where you could have had the big last woman standing match between her and Nia. That would have been a dope way to get Tiffany Stratton, you know, get, as you were saying, kind of like that further justification, because she's still kind of fighting to justify herself as champion because she cashed in. That would have been a great way to really cement her as a strong champion. And the the fact that she wasn't the strong champion, Sancho, and maybe follow me here, I think is part of the reason why that Charlotte and Tiffy feud just fell flat. They didn't do a great job of building Tiffy in the process. And I think part of that was the maybe the first rolling of the snowball down a hill of that mess of a feud that was Charlotte and Tiffany Stratton. More information has come out on that and everything that happened and Charlotte's feelings about it. But even beyond the Charlotte feud, they just did not do a great job at continuing Tiffy's reign. Just like Io Sky, they just sort of disappeared after WrestleMania, only appearing on Friday Night SmackDowns, no PLEs. She finally gets a PLE spot at Evolution, and it's a one-week build with Trish Stratus in what was the shortest match of the night. Good match, but not really what I want to see from, you know, your young, up-and-coming champion that you're trying to build your division on SmackDown around. I feel like there's been a lot of gaps here. And we're going into a big feud and a big match for her with Jade Cargill. And I once again feel like this is an undercooked storyline, dare I say, non-existent storyline with Jade Cargill. Unfortunately.
Is it because she's a face? Is it because she's a face? Because we know she's born to be heel.
I know, dude. You know there's people that still think she's heel? That consider Tiffany Stratton today still heel. I mean, she's still got the mean girl vibe, but I would definitely say that she's listed as a babyface for sure.
She's definitely a babyface. I mean, she's programmed to be a babyface, if that makes sense. Like, her run of the show, her placement in the show is babyface. She's at the top of the hour. But she never completes a promo, and I brought this up before in the past, and her backstage segments, like, and maybe she just needs, I did a video on YouTube talking about 29 superstars, what they need, right? Like, what's the missing ingredient? Like, X person needs more ring time, X person needs more mic time. I think Tiffy just needs more segments that are not in the ring, because when she comes out of the ring, she gets interrupted, and she's been working mad stiff lately. Maybe if her first feud was Bianca Belair, dude, that's a dope shirt, brother. Dude, I miss that office. That's my office back in my other home in California. That was my wife made that office just for me, and it's like the perfect office because it's on the outside, and it was like my little cave, and I was able to do so much cool things to it. But the audio listeners, you should definitely check out the YouTube, because I know the audio quality is not the best. But I think more importantly, Santi, at the end of the day, when you're looking at the 6 months of Tiffany Stratton, I think it's the unexpected length of her staying as face. Kind of unexpected that she still is a face.
I would think that they had, you know, if you're trying to make Jade Cargill into one of your biggest baby faces in the company, that I just would have thought that you would have wanted her to go up against a big bad heel, and a big bad heel Tiffany Stratton would be so much fun. We know that she's a great heel worker, and I think that's what that championship reign needs. I don't think it's going to get it, because I think she's going to lose at SummerSlam.
She turns heel there.
Unless she turns heel there. You're right. There is room for her to turn heel, and that's what allows her to keep the title beyond SummerSlam. That'd be great, but yeah, dude, 6 months of Tiffy as a babyface champion hasn't been the most ideal thing for her, if you ask me.
A question. Do you think the women's division is missing a damage control faction? Like, the Secret Harvest you kind of talked about, they are, like, street-level faction, but it's like, are they missing a dominating faction to cause? Like, what if Tiffy and Naomi teamed up as a two-woman power trip type vibe, where they're both champions and they're both holding down the fort type of thing?
I mean, here's the thing. Like, they tried. Like, damage control was fodder for the most part, unfortunately.
Yeah, Nia had Candace too, but that didn't grow into anything bigger.
PFC was a failure. They've really just...
Come on, dude. I'm still recovering from PFC. I haven't yet to fill that glaze factory. I was going to bring up that Raquel Rodriguez was going to be in my glaze factory soon. It doesn't matter, man, woman, organic, The glaze factory welcomes all. You know what I mean? And sure. Raquel Rodriguez working big now. Amazing. The Hanna bomb on Bailey. But don't bring up PFC, dude. That thing was doomed to start from the beginning.
But
from
I think I think like one of the 14 million scenarios Dr. Strange saw, he's like, oh yeah, and all 14 million PFC fails. There's not a single timeline where PFC is successful. You think
he messed up by not telling Tony? Do you think Tony Stark knew?
No. I think the only way for that to work is not to tell Tony.
Man, a blunder not using Iron Man theme at that end. I love the fan edit where it's like, and I am Iron.
That would have been cool. What were we talking about?
6 months. Women's factions.
Yeah, women's factions, they haven't really worked in WWE. Have you noticed that? Damage control should have worked. But unfortunately, they became... the booking for Damage Control became so one-dimensional where it's just like, you guys are just here to lose. That's your job. You guys are just here to lose.
Yeah, they've been a lot
more dominant. Sure, they won titles, but man, I would say that their win-loss rate was like 95% losses to 5% wins. That's what it felt like with Damage Control at times. Especially in like War Games. Remember? Like they'd always be like the big bads for War Games. They'd lose every time.
Oh, yeah, that last Women's War Games was just so tough to watch because it felt like there were just all the heels. There was just like a mixed match of heels all together. And then remember they started with Nia as the champion. Like, why is the champion going first in this match?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, and they had like Nia and Liv on the same team. Oh, yeah, that War Games was a mess. Here, let's move on there. Another six-month thing is the 6 months of the TNA partnership. It hasn't quite been 6 months, but the TNA partnership with WWE has given us moments like Joe Hendry at WrestleMania, Joe Hendry at the Royal Rumble. We've had a TNA talent cross paths with NXT pretty much every single week. TNA champion Trick Williams, TNA champion JC Jane, AJ Styles appearing over in TNA, plenty of NXT talent having matches over on TNA. Like it's pretty much every single week there is a cross-pollination between the two. I'll kind of lead this off, man. I think it's really fascinating. WWE loves being the good guys in these types of rivalries. And I think it is fascinating that they have positioned themselves as the bad guys here. They've positioned themselves as the big, bad, evil company that is sending people to put down little TNA. And now two heel champions from WWE are running around holding a TNA hostage. I think that's fascinating because I think it's setting it up. And maybe I'm being optimistic. I think it's setting it up for a big, big moment for TNA to get it all back, for TNA to come together and topple the tyrannical WWE and take out the evil Trick Williams and JC Jane at what is their biggest show, their WrestleMania Bound for Glory in a couple of months. I just think it's cool that WWE positioned themselves as the bad guys in this relationship.
My only thing is, why couldn't – the problem is, and I think you're hinting at it, that they can't do that big comeuppance on the WWE because they're WWE people. Like, it would be cool if it happened at a Survivor Series if there was an invasion angle with TNA, but there won't be – their WWE is not going to book themselves as the bad guy on WWE programming. They're down to clown. Remember that? Down to clown on the TNA side of things.
Yeah, and I think that that's going to be the big payoff, right? Hey, let's position TNA to on their biggest show of the year to have their big moment, their big payoff against big, bad, scary WWE, big, scary Trick Williams and JC Jane to finally save TNA. It's interesting to see WWE willing to play ball that way. You know what? I'm saying willing to play ball, but I don't actually know that that's where things are going to go. That's where my head thinks it's going to go.
Santi.
But it's possible it just doesn't.
being on the Wrestling is Cool podcast. I am the TNA here. I should just be thankful that I'm sitting here next to you, working with you. The popularity rub should work. You're like, oh man, yeah, come work with me. Don't worry. You're going to be on TV. You're going to have your stars on TV and they're going to get over. They'll be on CW and they're going to have their time in the sun. Oh, you know what? We'll give your champion a spot at the Royal Rumble. Wouldn't that be so cute? He comes out the Royal Rumble, does his little thing. Oh, you know what? We need a spot to have him go up against Randy Orton in his 10th WrestleMania. You know what? Why don't we have a little fun little match with Randy Orton? Oh, you know what? You're going to go up against the NXT Trick Williams? You know what? We're going to let Trick Williams win. Yay. Good for you, little TNA. You're doing so well. I'm telling you, man, this is a one-sided relationship still.
Right now it is. No matter what. Right now it is. Maybe I am being naive.
TNA on thumbnail. TNA on thumbnail.
Maybe I am being naive, but I'm optimistic with the fact that it's two heel champions. Heels always get their comeuppance.
Yeah, I see your point.
They always get their comeuppance. I see your point,
but it should happen on WWE television.
That's where it will hit a bigger... Nah. I want it to. It ain't going to happen. They ain't going to play that much ball.
I'm going to be on the thumbnail and your kick. You know, that's the equivalent of me winning.
No, man, I'm going to put you on my Rumble video thumbnail.
I'm going to get on Rumble. It was like, what else was out there? YouTube and then Rumble, Daily Motion,
Vimeo. Honestly, you and I have found some weird websites because of Match Club, where we're like, okay, how do we find this obscure site? It's on like Toki Video, and we're like, all right, this is where we definitely have spyware on our computer now, but this is our life now.
Definitely, my webcam's been turned on when not me knowing. You know what I mean? My voice is being recorded. I am, let's talk about the unexpected delights of the TNA relationship. H.A. Francis is back on TV.
My God, that bump. Oh, dude, I thought he snapped his leg in five pieces.
The take a crotch spot on a ladder the idea of it's insane.
Like, yeah.
He's failed for like a story and a half to land to the floor.
We're talking about like a near 400 pounder. I don't know if he's 400 pounds. Maybe he is. I don't know, but he's big dude. He's a big, big, scary man to be falling that far from the ladder. But he's all right. And he lived.
We got the return of Fandango for a bit too.
That's true. Santino appearing on TV. Santino getting to have a working relationship with AAA. We got Santino in the Cobra versus La Yesca and Mr. Iguana.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And he's working with his daughter too. That's pretty cool. And then the one, the man of the four rope promotion.
Yeah, the four rope promotion.
I really do believe, I know it happened on TNA, but I really do believe we're getting close to Enzo coming back to WWE, dude. Oh,
man, I don't know. Dude, funny enough, that got the most views out of anything I've posted in the past 2 weeks. The Enzo return, I think, got more views on like Facebook and Instagram than like Roman returning on Raw.
It's because he's untapped potential or wasted talent, some would say as well. Depends on what lens you're looking at it, but dope promo, man. I know it's a little long, but it's still a great promo. I love the line where he was like, and attention, Walmart choppers, which all of you are Walmart choppers. It's like the stuff that he was saying with about Zillafat too as well. Like it was fun and it's captivating. You know, he's a captivating talker. He would want to listen to it. And then I still to this day pop for, what do we got here? A couple of haters. It's just like it gets me going. It reminds me of a time where I was like, because like that's when I started getting back into wrestling, was with the Enzo and Cass and those characters. And Enzo and Cass, I remember, dude, they came out at the Rumble one time. They opened the Rumble and they cut their promo, and that place was loud. And I was sitting there talking to my buddy who doesn't watch wrestling. I was like, these dudes are awesome. And I was like, S-A-W-F-T-S-O-F.
Yeah, man, Slammiversary was a good show. Broke a record, over 7,000 tickets sold, which is obviously like a great number for TNA, their highest gate ever. Wrestling's healthy, dude, between AEW doing a nearly 30,000 people show with All In, WWE obviously constantly breaking gate records, TNA being healthy. It's a good time to be a wrestler right now, you know, with healthy promotions, healthy indies, being able to bounce wherever it is that you need to bounce if you get let go from one company or another. I think it's good for the ecosystem to have a healthy TNA. It really, really is.
Yeah, but, you know, there's even though there's healthy parts of wrestling, you do see that there's, you know, with Cora Jade's going through, she's recently saying that she wants to take a break from wrestling for a bit to reset her mental. I mean, there's still strange parts of wrestling that as it grows, we hope could get past some BS that's been in the past. You know what I mean? Like, this tribalism, of course, is what's hurting wrestling the most, but it's something I'm hoping that future wrestling fan generations can grow out of. And I think that the healthier these promotions and the more stream-wise and things are available, like on Netflix and things of that sort, I think we will slowly wane from that. The problem is, I feel like sometimes where wrestling gets hurt the most now, Santi, is like it's not – some would argue that it's not consumer-driven. And it's now money driven, and it's bringing everything up to like all the boats are rising. But I'm hoping that wrestling could return to a consumer driven product, because I feel like Nostradamus here, man. Those ticket sales are going to hurt the product going forward. And what that could do, Santi, is that could be like, oh, you know, I can't afford to go to WWE, but you know what, bro, I could go to a TNA show. It's around town. I could go to AEW. It's around town. So maybe that will kind of rebalance the scales.
Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned the tribalism bit. I don't really see any tribalism of like TNA or WWE, right? I think it's their working relationship that has really removed that from the equation of tribalism between those two brands. And it really is still just AEW versus WWE. Maybe a soft working relationship somewhere down the line between AEW and WWE can quell this stupid conversation of tribalism and wrestling fans having to pick one or the other, when really you should just pick whatever you want, enjoy whatever you want, and whatever fits your schedule, really.
Yeah, I think we're the biggest next milestone to take a temperature check. I know we're doing a 6 months gimmick here, is that what's going to happen with WWE ID? That's, to me, a 5-year down the road check, and like look back, how does AEW finding its talent, and how is WWE flourishing that WWE ID, their indie program talent, up? Because it's in the background, it's there. I try to keep up with it on the timeline on X, but it doesn't really – it's not really doing anything for me. Like, I'm not seeking out WWE ID matches or anything like that, you know? I'm not following the wrestlers and, oh, they have a match here on this YouTube channel. I'm not doing that. But I am interested more in LFG. Like, that – because it's on cable television, I'm more following those wrestlers than what's happening on the ID side of things. So it's interesting that the WWE – to promote this healthy wrestling ecosystem that they're doing, is that they are finding avenues of entertainment. And just to go back to the Unreal thing, maybe that might inspire college athletes, might inspire professional athletes, or, you know, people in the NIL to go, maybe I should go to wrestling, because it's not as carny as it appears. You know, it's more professional in the sense of there's a machine, there's business executives, there's the locker room has this camaraderie, and I'm attracted to that. Like, these guys don't have backstabbing vibes as it's being presented. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of interesting aspects to it. And I think one of the last things I want to talk about at this point, you talk about a healthy WWE. I think it's a healthy time to be wrestling, because the WWE is not going to stop you from doing movies. They're not going to stop you from doing a podcast. They're not going to stop you doing a YouTube channel. Like, Brutus has his own channel where he's trying food. And they're not going to stop Cody, Roman from being mainstream stars in the movie scene. So the WWE is going to continue to grow, and I think like it is a good time to be a wrestler, as to piggyback on your comment, considering that as well. Because, dude, like, you remember Vince was like so hard in on like relationships and harden on not having wrestlers be in movies. And it was, think about if The Miz was able to do the movies that he wanted. Think about if Seth Rollins could have done the movies that he got in, or Damian Priest. Dude, Damian Priest was in Aquaman and he couldn't do it.
I didn't know that.
Was it Aquaman?
I genuinely didn't. It might be. I don't know.
He was going to be in some movie, like some role in Marvel or something. Anyway, Weppa. Hey, Iron Man, bing bong.
Oh my god, dude, what if Damian Priest voiced Thanos and when he was beating down the Hulk, he goes bing bong weppa. He's just throwing him around.
Dog, Damian is in purgatory, brother. Like, what are you doing with Damian Priest? Like,
He's got something. At least it's not like a Drew McIntyre situation feuding with Jelly Roll.
Oh, stop. Stop. I'm excited to hear all the names you have to read off later today, but I feel that for Damian Priest, he should have been in that Jelly Roll match.
Dude, I could list you so many different people that could have been better. Sure, Damian Priest. Like, what a... I already talked at length about this.
I know, but what say you? The rumor is that Randy wanted that match.
That's fine. I want a lot of things I shouldn't have.
I think Randy...
Yeah, obviously it's Randy. He can do whatever he wants, but I wish somebody would be like, bro, we got to use you somewhere else that we need you more.
I think Randy is in that match for a heel turn, personally. And I think it's his idea to, like, what's a bigger heel turn for me? Is to punt kick Jelly Roll.
That sucks so much ass. I don't want to see that. That sucks, bro. And I'm not mad at you. No, I'm not you because you that could very well be happening. I think it's possible.
You're gonna pop though when you see Jelly on all fours, and he's sitting there and he's like,
I don't like that around. I can't see you as you're explaining this. You're gonna get excited when Jelly's on all fours going,
You see Randy doing his thing in the corner.
No, stop it. Enough.
Randy's gonna go, dude. You know, right in the jelly, dude. Right in the jelly hole.
Oh, stop. Right in the jelly. All right, we're ending the episode there. Folks, thank you very much for watching this episode of the Wrestling Is Cool podcast.
Hey, again, I apologize for the internet. It's unfortunate, like, literally... 10 up, 10 down, what are you going to do, right? But we made it work.
This episode's for the hardcore. This episode's for those that stuck around to see the carousel of Sancho photos.
What was your favorite?
Let me see. Let me go through them again.
I like Imposter.
Let me see.
Dude, that's an Ellie sweater, by the way. The Ellie hoodie, the Napoleon one.
Yeah, I do like the imposter one. I don't know where it is right now. I like the cowboy one though. Cowboy Sancho OS. Cowboy shit.
Thank you. Now that's what you think of.
Imposter one's good though.
That's an orange ski, like a bodysuit, like a morph suit, and that's a ski goggles. That was when I was trying to, you know what? I hate that. The reason why I was late on the Among Us, I was late, dude. You know, the Valkyries, that could have been me. I could have been Valkyrie.
It could have been you, brother. Could have been you wearing a morph suit every video. I want people to use this as their Patreon profile picture, by the way. Among Us Sancho.
Like a bunch of minions, dude.
Folks, we won't do a new heat order today. Again, it's one of those bizarre episodes, but Doesn't change the fact that many of you are paying the $15, which makes you producers of the show, so your name does get read out here. So an extra special thank you goes out to our producers, starting with my favorite donut was renamed to Jelly Roll. Number one, Santi Glazer, Jacob Kufis, first Patreon, iCrazyDude says Jelly Roll, Ace1151, Aiden, Abreem Zuda, Alex Regal, Alex, Alfie the Chosen One, American Nightmare, Cody Lander, Antoni Arjona, Antoni, Arbok, Ariel Pacheco, Arrogance, Ashley Reynolds, Ozzy Kingslayer, Austin Hoglin, Ayo Carr, Bailey Saunders, Beans, BG13, B Hostile, Bing Bong Wepa, Blue Cord, Bluefish13, Bobby, Braden Primo, Brady Keaton, Brandon, Brian Flores, Caleb Parker, Cameron Warren, Cameron Talks WWE, Carlos Gonzalez, CB, Cena, Cody, Double Turn at Mania, Chimchar Collectibles, Chris Butner Lucas, Chris Estes, Christian, Chucky Gonzalez, Clay, Colby Mayo, Cookies for Sale, Cool Whip Tim, Corey King, Cyber, Dalton Dunbar, Rain, Chris Williams, Matthew Scott, The Short God, Fenelate, Zonk, Jared Broyard, They Call Me The Juice Box, Mikey, Amir For Real, Ali, Jamie Cooper, Dino Man, Kabuto, Jaham Al-Kawari, Otto, Aaron, Braden Cook, Nolan Martin, Goon, Rogue Cage, Robot, Aaron C., Will Lamb, Marshall, Michael Gross, Nicholas, Joey, Reggie Green, Nick Falk, Max. Oh no, I screwed this up. I've been reading a bunch of people that are not $15 tiers. Screw you, everybody that's not a $15 tier, I take all of that back. You don't get your name read out. Pretend like you didn't hear anything. I don't know what happened there.
I was like, there's not enough jelly rolls here, dude.
Let's try that again. My favorite donut was renamed Jelly Roll number one. Zonti Glazer, Jacob Kufis. Wait, okay, hang on. I read all this. What? I think something happened when I like changed the page too. Okay. All right, we're back. David Nelson, Dennis Jamie, Derek Barnhart, Devin Geards, Digi, D. Lopez, Do It Now, Go Juan, Doug Dimmadome, owner of the Dimsdale Dimmadome, Dumsky, Dylan Ariola, Sean, Edger Nation, El Jano Americina, El Joshi, Eric Crosby, Eric Ruiz, Romero, Aaron Thorne, Isatch, you're both wrong. His name is Doctopus.
Shout out to Grande Americano for going like yo soy luchador, tú eres basura, tú eres
basura, güey, pinche tu madre, qué pasa.
Dude, maybe they picked him because he speaks Spanish. Maybe. I don't know what, but
he speaks it very well. Hilarious. He speaks it very well.
Strikes me up.
Fishing with Papa J, Fletcher Walpole, FMFCMA, Freezer, Fugnux, Gamerscape, Garrett Woods, Giovanni Gonzalez, Gilbert Deans, Guna Tonga, GXA Man, Hartfeld, Heath Robertson, Henry Ramon, Hey Shakes, Hoodie Cam, I Believe in Miss Piggy, Oink Oink, I'm Rick James, Bitch, Ian McNugget, If Oldberg Wins the World Title, I Shave My Head, I'm Braun Strowman, It's Mr. Astro Kid, Ivan Martinez, Jack Gibley, Jack Harris, Jackson, Jackson Parrish, Jacob Mueller. Jacob Pena, Jacob Staffel, Jaden Davis, Jaden Solomon Jones, Jake Chavoya, Jason De Dios, Jason Vane, Javier Rodriguez, Jay Henry, Jalen Steele, Javian McDuffie, Jay Angel, JC Worley, Jelly Roll Goose Lesnar, Jelly Sancho is over, brother. Jelly Roll Mateo, Jeremiah Finley, Jeremiah Kelly, Jay Franco, Jahihi Ahihi.
That's it.
That's all we got this week. JJ, damn, Joey Roman, Johnny Owens, Jordan Lins, Josby, Juice J, Juliana Sarfi, Justin Brooks, Justin Perkins, Caleb Martin, Kevin Bega, Kenyon P., Crab, Kuwaiti Rick Books, Kyrie Lawrence, LA Knight Glaze, All Over My Body, Liam, Life of Brian, Lil Shifu, Luis Jimenez, Mark, Marnie YCSM, Matt Bozer, Matthew Dollar, Matthew Oberg, Matthew Watkins, Mossy, McQueen X, Mackay, Meredith Lee, Michael Carlson, Michael Hobbs, Michael Purnell, Michael Paz, Michael the Third, Michael Vera, Miguel Paredes, Mitchell X, Jelly Roll, Muhammad, Muhammad Albanai, the homie, Mr. Patreon Run-In, Nathan Tully, Nicholas Kyle, Nighthawk, Nino Array, NyQuil Pad, Noah, Noah Booth, Obi Nobi, Oil Up Now, Santi69, Oliver Hammonds, Pat R, Pat McMark, Pim Koff, Rody, Prince Vegeta, Proceed With Caution, Puppet Spanker Johnson, Reacher, Reaper God, Reese, Reyes, Carrera, Ricardo Ramirez, Rick Marr, Ricky Dutcher, Robert Rogers, Roll Man of Jelly, Royce Ruffo, Ruben Sanchez, Ryan Spradley, Riley, Sam Duke, Sancho Doesn't Get a Safe Space, Sancho's Opinions Over Santi's Opinions, Santi is Mr. Iguana, Santi is now Santi Depressly because of Jelly Roll. Santi lives in Canada. Sauce God, Saudi Rick Boog, Semba, Seymour Butts, got me. Shaggy, yeah. WWE, yeah. Shane, Shitstain Nakamura, Sip God, Sir Alberton, Slime Manny, Slow Toke Rodriguez, Stephanie Delray, Stephanie Vaque, Lookalike Contest in My Bedroom, Stephen Corby, Super Malachi Galaxy, Tim and Brian, the 17 time WWE Undisputed Dumbmaster, Nightmare, Vanilla Joe, Rilla, The Final Boss, Bloodline Rules, The Jizz, The Weppa Warrior, Bing Bong, Timmy C, Toasty aka Fraxium, Tobias Burnett, Trent Head, Trevor Harder, Trey and Catherine Love Jelly Roll, Two Slapped Cupid, Tycho, Tyler Logan, Tyler McGarry, V Charles, Vegan Penguin, Venom, Void Dizzy, Juan Pablo, White Mexican, William Newton, Xavier D. Lewis, Zach Smira, Deadshot, Yo Girls Account, You Stupid, My Deek, Zach Griffin, Zach Hewitt, Zach Butcher, Zane, Zay2K, Zeke Love, Zergzito, and Lord BBNJ. Thank you guys for being at the $15 tier. We appreciate you very much. You guys take care. Be wonderful people. And Among Us Sancho can't hurt you. Goodbye, everybody.